All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota, and you have joined the State of Wisconsin Sense on this Thursday, March 2nd. And I almost have my ducks in a row here as I get the show ready to put on for folks here. I was looking up my notes, and honestly, Aaron, the problem is I found a correction right off the top. I was looking at comments on Facebook just now and realized that, actually, I don't know if it's a correction we have to make, but if so, it falls in your purview from yesterday's music segment when we said, or you were playing Claire de Lune as we were talking about Chopin's birthday. And I have a comment here from Ardith Thomas, who says, great segment with Sarah Godlewski. I hope the marches break records. I love the history and music segments, but it was Claude Debussy who composed Claire de Lune, not Chopin.
Oh, I feel like a fraud.
How do you plead?
guilty.
Okay. See, I love this. This is the kind of thing we need. We need that kind of feedback to keep us on the straight and narrow here. So there you go. We read the comments, and if we make a mistake, we say so. We put it right up there. All right. If you want to chide Aaron on anything else, you can give him a call on our studio lines, 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. The email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Now let's get to what's coming up on the program today. We're going to talk about how Dan Kelly is conflicted. There is a new key difference in the two candidates for Wisconsin Supreme Court. One just made a pledge to avoid some potential conflicts of interest. The other candidate already has a history of bulldozing right over concerns about conflicts of interest and a lack of impartiality. And we will hear more about that from Joe Zepecki coming up a little later on this hour. And then we've got a busy 7 o'clock hour here in our hometown health segment. Dr. Kristen Lyerly and Suzanne Herman from Period Law. We'll talk about the ongoing fight to eliminate the pink tax, the tendency for products marketed toward women to cost more than virtually the same products targeted to men, and the period tax as well. Also, in our next hour, we will talk to Seth Hoffmeyer from Wisconsin Conservation Voters about what their group believes their members, people who care about conservation and the environment, need to know, so that they will, A, go vote on April 4th, and B, make good choices in the ballot box in terms of our natural resources. We will get an update on the forecast as we wrap up the week and end of the weekend from Weatherology. And in our Civic Media homeroom, we will hear from one Luke Mathers, we believe. So we'll look for him near the end of the program. Okay, now Oscar night is about 10 days away. And the Academy might want to take note of the performances that were offered up yesterday by Republican senators during a session with U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland. My goodness, the shouting, the interruptions, the feigned indignation, the sudden appreciation for a functional American government, all that and more was put on display by some of the very same people who tried to overturn an American election. The same people who set the stage for violence in the Capitol and who have the gall to still hold elected office despite their disdain for democracy. And why do they still hold office? Because, frankly, not nearly enough has been done to hold accountable the people who attacked our country between Election Day 2020 and January 6, 2021. And the best way for these people to keep the U.S. Department of Justice from holding insurrectionists accountable is to pontificate and to intimidate the Justice Department. So we were forced to hear more about, oh, good God, Hunter Biden, and about their feeling that conservatives are being investigated more forcefully than progressives. I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with conservatives trying to install Donald Trump as a ruler despite not winning the election. Maybe it's the conservatives who were disrupting school board meetings and threatening violence about conspiracies that didn't exist in our schools, like furries and litter boxes. Maybe DOJ is overwhelmed by the fentanyl crisis because these same conservative politicians have refused for 30 years to do anything real about immigration, which would allow for better control of our borders. Again, this is all about the conservatives in office right now, who, in my view, are an embarrassment to my conservative friends and neighbors. And I know this. I talk to them. Any one of them would be able to sit with progressives and do a better job. They don't have any patience for insurrectionists. They see the value of a real and stable immigration plan. They'd want to lock up anybody, Republican or Democrat, who showed signs of potentially sharing classified information with foreign actors. They'd go after tax cheats because tax cheats hurt conservative families just as they do progressives or independents. But it's these conservatives in power right now. They get a taste of power. They get a taste of the money involved in these campaigns, and they can't help themselves. I mean, I would argue they were flawed from the beginning. They have been raised on a steady diet of Newt Gingrich, Rush Limbaugh, Pat Robertson, Sean Hannity, and the goofballs who populate right-wing radio across Wisconsin. Their moral compasses are askew thanks to a magnetic cloud of conspiracy theories they've surrounded themselves with all their lives. And it leads them to offer performances like what we saw on Capitol Hill yesterday. With no chance of an Oscar coming their way, if anything, when some of them hear the words "and the envelope, please," our best outcome would be for the envelope to hold a subpoena. Let's take a break, get an update on your forecast. We'll do a little sports and have some more headlines from around Wisconsin. Coming up next, you're up north. Well, here we go. The show started with having to make sure that Mr. Zommers took note of and took ownership of an error. And now the host is about to do the same thing. I'm pretty sure that I said Annette Herman was going to be our guest at 7:30 with Hometown Health with Kristen Lyerly. It's Suzanne Herman. My apologies for getting that messed up. Maybe I'm just too distracted by the Milwaukee Bucks because they are now on a 16 game winning streak after routing the Orlando Magic 139-117. I don't sit through and watch a lot of NBA games. I'm much more of a baseball, football person, but I had it on yesterday. I couldn't help but watch after a while. The crowd was really into it at the Fiserv Forum yesterday and cheering on what was a real shooting clinic for the Bucks. I wanted to see if I have the number of three-pointers that they had. They went 26 of 56 from three-point range. You know, 56 three-pointers, that just tells you how the game has changed over the years. You almost wonder, does anybody do a layup anymore? No, not when you can get three from downtown, as they like to say. Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 31 points, and that 26 three-pointers was a season high for the Bucks, giving them the 16 straight wins on the season. They have also won their last 13 games against the Orlando Magic. So even though the Boston Celtics also won yesterday, the Bucks remain just ahead of them for the best record in the National Basketball Association. And the Bucks will next play at home on Saturday against the Philadelphia 76ers. There was a post from State Representative Robin Vining, and she said it so well in this social media post yesterday. It simply read the following. It is March. The Wisconsin State Assembly did not convene to vote in February. The Bucks won 10 games with an all-star break, and we voted zero times. It's eerily quiet in the Capitol. One wonders why the GOP doesn't want to hear actual bills or take votes right now. Huh. Representative Vining, I don't think I could agree more. It's not like certain Republican legislators, they're not all at home just collecting a paycheck. There are some committee hearings, but again, no actual legislating. And in the case of leadership in the Assembly and the Senate, well, they've been on the speaking circuit. One of the big occasions that takes place every legislative session is when the Wisconsin Counties Association comes to town. County officials from around the state show up in Madison, and they hear from the governor, and they hear from state legislators, and they hear from others. And they heard from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss yesterday. And here's what the Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly, an assembly that did not vote on anything in the month of February, an assembly that took 10 months of paid vacation last month. Here's what Voss had to say about Governor Tony Evers' budget. He referred to it as phony math. In a story in the Associated Press, it reads, Wisconsin Republican legislative leaders downplayed the state's record budget surplus. We do not have anywhere near the money that Governor Evers spoke about, Voss said. I'm sorry, is he saying that the Legislative Fiscal Bureau got it wrong by phony math? Does phony math mean the number $7 billion doesn't exist? Speaking as if the surplus didn't exist, Voss said that Republicans would tie any additional funding for local governments to new requirements on how it could be spent. In other words, the people who once told you that they are all about local control have revealed themselves to be the ultimate control freaks. Democrats and Republicans who are not in leadership have shown signs of finding common ground in some areas, like creating more affordable housing, building out electric vehicle charging stations. That is the way of the future. But here's how Voss put it. We are transitioning as the federal government forces us. It's not by choice. It forces us to buy electric vehicles, Voss said. Does he have an oil well in his backyard? I mean, I'm not really that familiar with the Racine area where he's from. If you look offshore, are there oil wells in Lake Michigan? I mean, I'm sure he'd like it if there were, because everything about him and his caucus indicates that if it were up to them, they would stay in the back pocket of big oil forever. And we would be burning fossil fuels forever, because that's the mindset, is you just consume what's there in front of you, while the rest of the world is moving on to energy sources that are more efficient and more locally grown. But it gets even better. If you didn't know this already, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has no problem touching what used to be the third rail of Wisconsin politics, but he is all about toll roads. Now, being a resident of an area near the Chicago suburbs, perhaps that might not be troubling for him, but I know as well as you do that even the suggestion of toll roads constitutes fighting words among the voters I've talked to year after year after year. Here's how the Associated Press report story put it. Voss bemoaned the legislature not enacting toll roads in 2013 when it was discussed, saying long-term funding solutions are needed for transportation costs with revenue from the gas tax declining. Voss told reporters that he wanted to revisit the possibility of toll roads, but he also didn't think fellow Republicans in the Senate or Governor Evers would go along. Well, Speaker Voss, here's a little Wisconsin common sense for you. We pay enough taxes to take care of the roads. We don't need Republicans pulling more money out of our wallets just to use our own roads. Your party's been talking about a flat tax, which would be a massive tax break for the very wealthy. How about you use the money that you'd use to cut rich people's taxes and put it toward the roads we all use? Here's the phony math, as Voss likes to put it. However you calculate that more than $50,000 a year salary that he and other Republican lawmakers get, and then divide that by the days legislators stay home and don't do any work on behalf of Wisconsin families and farmers and businesses and the economy, while at the same time allowing a $7 billion surplus to sit unused, whatever amount of money went toward those legislators' salaries all this time, that's the phony math. That's what we can't afford in this state any longer. And yet here we sit still with a legislature that for the assembly did not gather in the month of February. The legislators refused to legislate. And as Robin Vining, Assemblywoman says, Democratic Assemblywoman says, it's eerily quiet in the Capitol. One wonders why the GOP doesn't want to hear actual bills or take votes right now. Huh. Very well said. We are at a time of year that you can see the increased daylight with each additional morning. And I was going to be happy to report to Aaron that for the first time in going out to get a cup of coffee just now before the show, I could make out, you know, some of the tips of the tree branches in the backyard by looking out to the east. We are finally getting to that point, those signs of spring that are coming in, and goodness knows that we need it. Winters are long enough, and we are looking forward to earlier sunrises all the time. And hopefully the amount of snowfalls, like kind of the mixed bag of precipitation that we had here over the past few days, hopefully that's starting to run its course, and we'll get an update from Weatherology coming up in the next hour. A reminder, by the way, that if you are watching us on one of our Facebook pages, either the one for Up North News or Civic Media or Bull Falls Radio, and if you leave a comment during the show, and if we see it, we can put it up on screen where we run the live feed of the show. Again, that's on those three pages. We're also seen on Twitter on the accounts for Bull Falls Radio and for Up North News, although we can't see the comments from Twitter that go on there. But we would love to pass along your comments, even if it's correcting some of the music that we play. That's totally fine. That's fair. We want to be accurate as much as possible. And you can also answer our question of the week, which deals with the Girl Scout cookies, because it's cookie time. And that's actually why I went to go look at comments to see if anybody had put in some new ideas for Girl Scout cookie flavors. So which is the best? What new flavor would you create? And we would really appreciate having your input on that as well. And as noted, we're going to be talking about conservation voters in the next hour. With the state Supreme Court race being what it is, as contentious as it is, and as direct an impact as it has right now, there are many groups on the left and the right who are looking to motivate voters to turn out, because the stakes are, like I said, they're so direct. You're not electing one of more than 100 legislators. You're not electing a governor who's got to work with the legislature, or one of 100 senators, or one of 435 congresspeople. You're electing one Supreme Court justice, and it's going to decide control of the court and everything that comes along with it. We are going to talk to Joe Zepecki about that coming up in our next segment. And we're going to talk about Wisconsin conservation voters coming up in our next hour as well. I wanted to do more about sharing Facebook comments, but as I was telling Aaron a minute ago, and I don't know if it's just me, but Facebook is taking longer and longer to load all the time. I mean, sometimes where I have to refresh the page, and it's not happening with anything else. And I don't know if that's something where maybe I need to log out of Facebook and then get back into it, or if it's just taking longer. And the only reason I thought I would mention it and see if other people were dealing with the same thing is that there was recently a press release put out by Senator Tammy Baldwin, who was also looking to, criticize Facebook and Meta, and say that it's, that their customer service is lacking and really needs to, be more improved. And I don't know, again, is that the infrastructure that they're dealing with, or is it simply, the customer service from a business standpoint? But whatever it is, it's a little odd. And it also reminds me that while we've been talking about TikTok and things like that, there are companies right here at home that, deserve some scrutiny. And so, yeah, here it is. It's Senator Baldwin and Attorney General Josh Call are pushing Meta to answer for inadequate customer service to Wisconsin small businesses. Small businesses have reported taking months to regain access to their hacked Facebook and Instagram accounts. So there's definitely customer service work to be done by that company. TikTok has its own issues, but again, it's one thing to score political points. It would be another thing to actually work toward good customer service from American companies as well. Joe Zepecki coming up in just a sec. You're up north. It doesn't really roll off the tongue, but if it's Thursdays, it's Joe Zepecki.
Hey, how are you, Pat?
That's what we'll go with, Joe. Hi, thanks for being here this morning. As always, we kind of look at the state stories from over the past week. The biggest state story, of course, is the state Supreme Court race. And as we're chatting here on a Wednesday afternoon, anticipating what's going to be in the news Thursday morning, you have something that you think will be in the news Thursday morning. Do tell.
Yes, some new reporting from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Both Supreme Court candidates did a couple of appearances today. Some radio down here in southeastern Wisconsin, also appearing before the Wisconsin Counties Association. And the topic of recusal has come up. And so for our listeners, this is sometimes there are conflicts of interest and a state Supreme Court justice or a judge at a lower court is conflicted out and would say, I need to recuse myself. I can't be impartial in this case due to who is before the court. The news here, the top line takeaway is Janet Protasiewicz is doing it the right way. Dan Kelly is doing it the wrong way. Stop the presses. And so going a little deeper on that, what Judge Protasiewicz has declared is that should the Democratic Party of Wisconsin appear before the state's highest court, she will recuse herself. She believes that given the amount of support she is receiving, that she could not be impartial in a case where they were directly, you know, involved. On the flip side, conservative Daniel Kelly, former justice appointed by Scott Walker, has declared no such policy on his behalf, even though we have recently learned he's been paid more, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars by the Republican Party of Wisconsin. And so once again, you have a clear dividing line between the candidates where Protasiewicz is saying, I'm going to do this the right way. I'm happy to recuse, if the state Democratic Party is before the court, and former Justice Kelly refused to make that stand. And it really opens the door to a lot of questions. And as you may remember, Pat, reminds us of some of Judge Kelly's history when it comes to recusal issues that he has had in the past.
And the conservative majority itself in this state Supreme Court has had recusal issues, shall we say. And it, essentially it's, you know, what recusal that we don't need no recusal rules. The impression they give.
And the most egregious instance was when Dan Kelly was on the state court, he recused himself from a case, then got $20,000 in campaign contributions, and then unrecused himself from a case before the state's high court. So it really makes you wonder whether Mr. Kelly can be impartial when he is just flat out saying, I'm not going to recuse if the Republican Party comes before the state. Come on, man. They were a direct client. They called you when they were trying to overthrow an election after 2020. And rather than telling them, that's crazy, I don't want anything to do with it, and hanging up the phone, you apparently billed them for the time, for the legal advice that they were asking you for. So it seems like every week we learn something even a little bit more troubling about Mr. Kelly. I didn't need to know much because I think Janet Protasiewicz is a fantastic candidate for the high court, and I'm voting for her. I'm not voting against anybody in this case. But man, the reasons that people might have for really not trusting Justice Kelly continue to pile up.
Let's turn to the new congressional committee investigating or possible oversight for the Chinese Communist Party, which Congressman Gallagher from up in Green Bay is chairing. And he's receiving accolades for it. It's been lauded as an island of bipartisanship. I have expressed multiple times already the sentiment that I'm hoping for the best, but I also wouldn't be the least bit surprised given Congressman Gallagher's tone about basically arming Taiwan to the teeth if this committee doesn't end up actually undermining Biden administration diplomatic efforts. I almost feel better that I'm the glass half empty person on this issue, and now you're the glass half full person when it comes to this committee.
Yeah, I think this is really important work, and I am heartened by the first hearing that was held Tuesday night in prime time. I don't think a lot of people watched it, but it was done respectfully, responsibly. There was a real tone of bipartisanship and working together, and that has to be the case. Because when it comes to our national security, our economic security, and the next 20 to 50 years of sort of global stability, we have a real deficit when it comes to ordinary Americans understanding the challenges and threats posed by China. And so I think we have to be clear-eyed about it. The executive branch has to do a lot of things, including a war in Ukraine, by the Russians, and healthcare, and a budget. And so I have no problem with congressional, congressional leaders weighing in with a select committee on China, because from semiconductor and chip technology to the question of Taiwan to the fact that we have authorized billions of dollars worth of weapons to go to Taiwan and not all of them have been delivered, there are very real questions here. And so, one hearing in, I applaud the efforts of this committee, and I hope that they continue to take the work seriously, because it also matters to Wisconsinites. And, nobody in Congress has been better on China issues than Senator Tammy Baldwin, who I think back to a decade ago, the first, issue she really jumped on when she was running for the United States Senate was unfair economic practices. The Chinese were dumping paper that was hitting the paper production industry in Northeast Wisconsin particularly hard. She is the author of the Made in America legislation that is, now embedded within things like the infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act, and really trying to return American manufacturing to our shores. And so this is an important issue for our country. It's an important issue for businesses and workers in Wisconsin. And so far, so good. So I'll be optimistic.
So if the China committee can be an example of a committee that is productive and moves in the right direction, there is concern that a different House committee chaired by a different Wisconsin Republican has the potential to go completely the other way. And that would be the House Administration Committee, which is going to be run by Brian Steil from the 1st District. And that is normally a fairly sleepy committee, but there are reports that this is the committee that Speaker Kevin McCarthy is going to give it the role of investigating the investigation into the January 6th insurrection. And that could get real ugly depending on how deep down that rabbit hole of conspiracies Brian Steil wants to go.
Yeah, I mean, listen, investigators investigating investigations is it just sort of becomes a never-ending doom cycle. I'm all for accountability and transparency. There are mechanisms in place, inspectors general within federal agencies that do literally investigate the investigators. It seems a little silly that a bipartisan committee that did a fantastic job by all accounts, and no, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz's accounts don't count in that scoreboard. The January 6th committee was an example of the very best of the work Congress can do. So it does seem odd that maybe as part of the deal, the raw deal that made Kevin McCarthy speaker, he had to sign off to the crazy part of his caucus. But I'm willing to let this play out. But I will say, Congressman Steil is not off to a good start in one of his first actions as chairman of this committee. He is defending Speaker McCarthy's decision to release 40,000 hours of security footage from January 6th to Tucker Carlson, a known lying liar who propagandizes nightly, who cannot be trusted because he says one thing on TV to his viewers while saying another thing in the privacy of text messages and emails with his colleagues, who is putting the bottom line of the corporation he works for ahead of informing the public of what they need to know. And we know all of that because Dominion, the voting machine company that is suing Fox News, was able to do discovery and within the last week has shown the world the text messages and the emails that all of them, from Tucker Carlson to Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, all of them, they were lying to their audience and they knew it and they didn't care. They did it anyway. How you can trust someone like that with sensitive security footage in an exclusive fashion is just beyond me. It's a bad move by Speaker McCarthy, and I don't understand what Congressman Steyer is up to if he is defending that move. It's okay to say this was a bad call, right? If you're going to give it to anybody, give it to everybody would be the easiest thing in the world to say, but he refused to do that. He's instead backing up the Speaker, who made a boneheaded choice.
Is this the same Fox News, in quotes, that Paul Ryan, the former congressman, is on the board of directors? And
one isn't the same.
Isn't he trying to once again to make a stab at relevancy?
It seems like it. Mr. Ryan, former speaker, former vice presidential nominee, used to be viewed as a real, you know, serious, thoughtful person in the Republican Party hierarchy, has sort of emerged from his hibernation and is doing a little bit of a media tour. I think he must have a new book that he's selling. I won't be reading it myself. And what's so frustrating is there were some things that Speaker Ryan did that I really applauded and appreciated. He was one of the few Republicans willing to say, I'm not going to defend Donald Trump. I can't defend the indefensible. And frankly, if more Republicans had done that, I don't think we would be in some of the messes that we are today. What is frustrating is that, you know, 5 years later, you have Mr. Ryan trying to have it both ways in saying that he wants to be a serious leader in the Republican Party, or at least positioning himself as such, and trying to avoid accountability for his involvement with Fox, with the Murdoch empire, which is not a news organization. We are seeing that in the discovery process of this lawsuit. And so for him to go out there and say, well, I'm on the board of directors and I offer my opinion and I tisk-tisk and I disagree with what Mr. Murdoch and those hosts were doing, that's not leadership. If you want to be taken seriously, you have to be serious. And I am not impressed by what I've heard from Mr. Ryan's comments on this issue in the last week or so.
We haven't spent a lot of time this week on the legislature's work toward a state budget. It's been kind of a slower week that way, but we'll cover a couple of things in our final minute or so here. The governor put forward a capital projects budget. These are more of the big ticket items, and it's always been a longer list than what the legislature will approve of. And I find myself asking out loud, is the legislature just cutting that list for the sake of cutting it? Or are
yes,
they putting
they are
there? I don't even have to finish the question, because I know, just speaking from the buildings I know that need work and have been put off for years and years. And with the kind of surplus we have, with less borrowing than ever needed for this, this is hardly a time to walk away from your responsibilities.
Well, the Republicans in the legislature walked away from their responsibilities a long time ago, right? Just to be able to say, we're for less spending, right? No matter if the governor said, I want to spend a penny on something, say, no, the governor's out of control again. We got to spend a half a penny. And that's nonsense, and it doesn't work. They have for years neglected to fund priorities that need to be dealt with, which is how you end up with a university system that has a $5 billion with a B dollar backlog of deferred maintenance. And so Republicans have abdicated their responsibility. They don't want to pay for the bills. What Governor Evers is saying is we have this once in a generation opportunity with a big surplus. We don't have to take on a lot of debt to do some of this. Let's tackle some of these head on. Let's use some of the cash from this one-time surplus to inject back into these buildings, some of which are literally falling down and could hurt or kill people. There was a building that on the UW-Madison campus that isn't supposed to reach the end of its life cycle until 2035, a dozen years from now. A section of it just fell down. Thank God it didn't kill a student. And so the governor, once again, being responsible, trying to pay the bills, live up to our commitments, Republicans in the legislature, color me surprised, saying, no, 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 there you go again. I don't get it.
There you go. There's your weekly update from Joe Zepecki, watching all things Wisconsin political. Thank you, sir.
We'll do it again next week. Thanks, Pat.
All right. Always appreciate that visit from Joe. We will take a break. Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be joining us for a little music break and a history lesson as we wrap up this hour of Up North News for a Thursday. We'll be right back.
Got me 10 feet off the ground. Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are near?
No, Kristen Lyerly hasn't picked another new opening theme song, but
I feel this way every morning when I'm with you,
Pat. Aww. On this day in music history, Karen Carpenter, born on this day in 1950. So I would love to tell you that it was her, 73rd birthday, but alas, we lost her at age 33 back in 1983. But only after an incredible trove of hits, including this beautiful little ditty. Dr. Lyerly, how are you this morning?
I am all right. The sun is shining. It's getting light out. This is amazing.
I was just talking about that. It's like, I feel like it's Thursday. Just since Monday, the extra daylight early in the morning is so nice. I could just...
We are approaching the equinox.
I could squeal, but I won't.
You guys ready for daylight savings time?
Hey, keep it down over there. We'll be fine.
I know I'm not.
I just don't like all the grousing about it. It is what it is, and we need it at this latitude. And, well, anyway, I'll go off on that rant later on. Let's see. Some other birthdays for today. Theodore Geisel, a.k.a. Dr. Seuss, was born on this day in 1904.
He always creeped me out, Pat.
How so?
I'm not a Dr. Seuss fan.
You're just not?
No.
Oh, my.
I mean, I appreciate his catalog of works. I appreciate how many people have loved him. But for me personally, I always found it a little unsettling.
A little more insight into the psyche of Dr. Lyerly. Lou Reed was born on this day in 1942. He passed away a decade ago now. It doesn't seem like would be it. Chris Martin, lead singer of Coldplay, is 46 today. Actress Rebel Wilson is 43. Bryce Dallas Howard, the actor, director, and daughter of Ron Howard, is 42 years old today. She was a part of the Jurassic World series, I think she's best known for, but also directed several episodes of The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett as part of the Star Wars series. So, again, got that directing gene in the family. All right, we've heard enough of Karen Carpenter. Let's head to another birthday boy who turns 61 today. Rum. John.
That'll wake you up.
There you got it. John Bon Jovi, better known as John Bon Jovi, but his actual real last name is spelled B-O-N-G-I-O-V-I. Bon Jovi. But Bon Jovi kind of comes off better. And he is 61 years old today. That's it. That's it for the birthdays. Here's a few notes from music history. Olivia Newton-John won Best Female Vocal Country Performance at the Grammys this day in 1977. Here's one that what?
You and I could do that song. You and I saw you. I saw you trying to sing that low part.
Oh gosh, when you're how old was I back then? 13. When you're a 13-year-old boy and you realize you can hit those low notes, oh, I mean, like, buy me the razor blade. I'm going to be shaving real soon here. Let me be there. On this day in 1983, I remember this, the first CD players commercially available to Americans were released by Sony. Do you remember your first CD player?
I talked my sister into buying one, and then I just bought CDs and played them on hers. Sorry, Carrie.
No, it's all right. It's fair. I was working at the college radio station at UW-Eau Claire, WUEC at the time, and it was like sorcery, you know, when we got our first CD players, and you know, we have walls and walls of vinyl, you know, of albums, and here we had this whole new medium to learn, and it was amazing. And we thought this is going to be the permanent thing. And now, who's played a CD lately? They're done. Seriously. They're as done as cassettes and 8-tracks. I will tell you that on this day in 1984, This Is Spinal Tap debuted in theaters. And here's one of the songs from it, Tonight, I'm Gonna Rock You Tonight. Actually on my list of things I still haven't watched. I've seen parts of it, but I don't think I've ever sat through it, you know, start to finish, which I know sounds a little odd.
It's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, after a few drinks especially.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's what I need to do. I need something on...
Let's just take a moment and make sure that Aaron is okay, because there's a whole drummer thing going on there.
Yes.
Like, there's, you have to be a little tender drummer in Spinal Tap.
Well, and Aaron has not spontaneously combusted, you know, during all of this. So
I haven't actually seen Spinal Tap.
What? You too?
Guys!
I need to.
Here we go. Movie night.
Party at the Kreitlows.
Well, there we go. I'd play it on my VHS player, but you know, nobody has that anymore either. I believe I have one more. And oh yeah, this one, just because I could listen to the intro all day. U2's Where the Streets Have No Name. Got album of the year and best performance by a rock group with vocals. All this for the Joshua Tree. And the song was off of that one. All right. As we have talked to Dr. Lyerly in the past, we've talked to her as she's doing work in Wisconsin, but we have also talked to her as she has hit the road and has been doing work in rural northern Minnesota. But you've also been working recently in rural southwest Minnesota. And I mean, it sounds like the answer is going to be obvious, but I'm going to ask anyway. No matter which of these areas you're in, Is the healthcare shortage for obstetrics and gynecology and everything else as acute there as the other places you've been?
It's interesting working in different places because you see different things and you mm-hmm. see how different health systems manage their complicated scenarios, and every scenario is different. So what happens when I'm in northern Minnesota and I'm working within a big health system, it's very different the way they staff, the way they problem solve, than when I'm in southwestern Minnesota and I'm working for a community health system. They're really growing down here. And what I'm seeing is they have embraced this problem. They're finding novel solutions, and they really are figuring out rural obstetrics. My hope is that I'm going to learn all of these things. And once this abortion crisis is over in Wisconsin and I can come back and practice in Wisconsin, we can start solving this problem back home.
It would be nice, because northern Wisconsin, you know, definitely needs it, as does northeast Wisconsin, I am sure. And we saw you in a new video that's just been released by A Better Wisconsin Together, the progressive research firm that, again, has you talking about the stakes of the state Supreme Court race, you know, since the Dobbs decision. And again, you know, we only have a couple of seconds here, but we would never waste a couple of seconds where we couldn't remind people there are real stakes involved in this race.
Yeah, it's not just about abortion. I mean, as an OBGYN doctor who cares for women, that is first and foremost for me. But it's about voting rights. It's about gerrymandering. This affects every single one of us. We all have to get out and vote.
Appreciate that. And again, absentee ballots, it'll be time to get those pretty soon. And you can get those in so that you don't have to worry about, you know, waiting in line or making time on April 4th, if need be. All right, we're going to talk again about the state Supreme Court race and the conflict of interest problems that Dan Kelly has. That's coming up after this break for news and weather. You're up north.